Today, risks build as bonds shoot for the moon. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm the latest post covering finance and property news, and this is our weekly market update. Well, this has been another crazy week on the markets, as the truth of higher rates for longer has started to permeate not only bond markets, but equity markets too. And after a stunningly strong US jobs report boosted the case for more tightening from the Federal Reserve, the US Treasury yield surged again. And this, of course, is continuing the trend from recent weeks. As I discussed in my last show, US jobs growth for September nearly doubled expectations as non-farm payrolls increased by 336,000 for the month, strengthening views that policymakers will need to keep interest rates elevated to cool inflation. Now, that's bad news for investors who were looking for a respite from a rise in Treasury yields that have wreaked havoc throughout markets over the past month, bruising stocks, supercharging the dollar, and pushing mortgage rates to their highest levels in more than two decades in the US. Treasury yields, of course, move inversely to bond prices. "It's quite a report," said Peter Cardillo, chief market economist at Spartan Capital Securities. "The likelihood of a Fed hike in November has risen. This is not what the markets were looking for." Two-year yields, which moved more closely in line with monetary policy expectations, jumped by about 6 basis points after the report to 5.081, while benchmark 10-year yields surged higher, reaching their highest levels since September 2007. It ended at 4.803. And on the long end of the curve, 30-year yields surged above 5%, hitting their highest level since 2007. They were recently at 4.96%. The S&P 500 dropped in early trade, but then turned positive, later to end up about 1.18% higher, though it was still down nearly 8% from its July high. In fact, the S&P 500 and Nasdaq registered their biggest daily percentage gains since late August, and the S&P 500 rose for the week, snapping a four-week losing streak. Information technology was up the most of any S&P 500 sectors, followed by communication services. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.87% to 33,407, and the Nasdaq Composite added 1.6% to 13,431. For the week, the S&P was up 0.5%, the Dow fell 0.3%, and the Nasdaq rose 1.6%. The CBOE Volatility Index, that's an options-based gauge of investors' expectations of near-term stock market gyrations, on Friday approached a five-month high before reversing. Still, the index's level of 17.45 remains well off past highs. Now, some analysts say that this could suggest the sell-off in the market is far from exhausted, or perhaps it's the truth that the VIX itself is beyond its sell-by date, given the high volume of shorter-term options in the market that are now used by market participants and which are not captured in the VIX at all. On the jobs report, some saw positive elements in the numbers, where the unemployment rate was unchanged at an 18-month high of 3.8% in September, and monthly wage growth stayed moderate. The day's data also showed a moderation in wages, which may have been because of the fact that most of the jobs added last month were in the lower paying industries. We're downplaying the headline number a bit, given that you aren't seeing the same job gains across the job surveys, said a portfolio manager at Harbor Capital. The market is taking it as a further signal that growth remains strong despite the impressive hiking cycle we've seen. Alex McGrath, Chief Investment Officer at North End Private Wealth, said markets might question the veracity of this report because of its sharp contrast with the ADP National Employment Report, which showed US private payrolls grew far less than expected in September. That aside, this move in yields will continue to serve as a gale force headwind to equities through to the end of the year, should they remain elevated at these levels, he wrote. Fed Funds futures traders on Friday added to bets that the Federal Reserve will indeed raise interest rates before the end of the year and keep them elevated for longer next year, Implied yields on contracts tied to the Fed policy rate pointed to a nearly 50% chance the Fed will lift the benchmark short-term borrowing rate a quarter percentage point to 5.5 to 5.75% at its December meeting. Despite those increased expectations, some investors said the sell-off in treasuries had tightened financial conditions for the Fed, potentially precluding the need for further rate hikes. While this report clearly makes it a closer call whether or not they will hike again this fall, tighter financial conditions are doing much of the work for them, wrote PIMCO economist Tiffany Wilding. However, Craig Ellinger, head of America's fixed income at UBS Asset Management, believes more rate increases could be in store, because real rates, which show how much investors can earn on treasuries after stripping out inflation, may not yet be restrictive enough, he said, despite their recent surge to 15-year highs. There needs to be probably a little more pressure to contain and constrain growth if the Fed does in fact want to reduce inflation, he said. So he plans to maintain exposure to short-term treasuries and corporate bonds. My plan is not to have a long-term plan. Once the Fed becomes less data dependent, I will become more confident in longer-term strategies around fixed income, he said. But these higher bond yields infer lower bond prices, which are, when marked to market, losses. So the key question is whether those unrealized losses need to be revealed. For Capital Economics chief economist Neil Shearing, the most obvious risk is if a large financial institution suffers losses on its bond portfolio when it's forced to recognize, whereby creating a crisis of solvency. This requires someone, somewhere, to bear a loss, and uncertainty about where that loss might ultimately sit can create dislocation within the broader financial system, he said. A second possibility is that a large institution becomes worried about its liabilities and is forced to divest assets, which in turn means it will crystallize any losses. In this sense, liquidity crises can morph into solvency crises, he said. And to this point, Deutsche Bank's head of European and US credit strategy, Jim Reid, said this week that surging bond yields had increased the unrealized losses of US banks on their debt securities by around $140 billion to a new all-time high of $700 billion. Insurers and pension funds are also big holders of bonds, and they could be exposed to troublesome losses too. Now, gold hit seven-month lows on Friday before rebounding to finish the day higher, but the week lower. Since October began, it's been a torrid time for the yellow metal, with the potential for the Federal Reserve to hike rates again amplified by US jobs data that sent Treasury yields and the dollar rallying. Gold's most active futures contract on New York's COMEX in December settled Friday's trading up 0.7% at $1,846.85 an ounce. It hit a seven-month low of $1,823.55 earlier. On a weekly basis, both COMEX gold and the spot price fell, responding to this month's heightened sell-off in bonds and rally in the dollar. Spot gold lost 4% last week. That's the most since nearly 6% during the week of June the 11th, 2021, but it slid another 1% this week. I think the bears will eventually push the spot price to $1,700 as global central banks are waiting to accumulate big chunks of gold at between the support level of 1760 to 1750, said Sunil Kumar Dixit, a technical analyst for gold at skcharting.com. The rampant US jobs growth for September didn't immediately bring the new wave of selling expected in gold, but I think whatever rebound you're seeing won't last, he said. The US dollar index, which pits the greenback against six other currencies, hovered at around 106.1, up on the day, but off from the 11-month high of 107.35 earlier in the week. European and London stock markets also experienced a notable upswing on Friday. The FTSE in London rose 0.58%. Germany's DAX was up 1.06% and Paris's CAC was up 0.88%. Meanwhile, in the UK housing market, a continuous monthly decline has been observed according to the Halifax Price index. There has been a significant £1,200 drop from last month's average cost, they said. This marks another month of reduced prices in the UK housing sector. But gilts in London were higher, of course, with a 30-year at levels not seen for decades at 5.034%, and the two-year was at 4.881%, well above the trust blip, and at levels last seen in 2007. Now, this means higher rates for mortgage holders and the Bank of England. And in Germany, the 30-year bond was at 3.111% compared with the negative rates of 2020. And that will give the ECB some headaches too. Asian equity markets experienced a wave of relief following a bond rout on Thursday. This was notably reflected in the performance of Japan's Nikkei index, which rallied a tad, but actually was down 0.07% on the day in the end. The yen was 149.3 against the US dollar. Hong Kong's Hang Seng rose 1.4%, while the Shanghai Composite was up 0.1% during a holiday period there. The yuan was at 7.3015 against the US dollar. And Friday brought attention to Japan's household spending metrics, along with rising jobless claims. The Australian share market finished higher on Friday as the recent rout in US bonds and equities eased overnight ahead of those key non-farm payroll numbers that came out later. The benchmark ASX 200 advanced 0.4% to 6,954.2 at the closing bell, but that sealed a weekly loss of 1.3% as investors fretted about a surge in bond yields. And it's also the first time since March 24th that the gauge finished the week below 7,000. But a sharp rally by the big banks did buoy the equity gauge on Friday. CBA rose 1.1% to $100.04. Westpac gained 2.1% to $21.44 after Barrenjoey upgraded the stock to neutral. ANZ added 0.9% to $25.32. And National Australia Bank climbed 1.5% to $28.94. Macquarie was at $165.95. The ASX 200's biggest stock, BHP Group, rallied 1.24% to $43.97, rebounding from losses earlier in the week as the Singapore iron ore price hovered at around $117.56, significantly higher than earlier in the year. Orpha Asset Management Head of Research, Luke McMillan, said the latest surge in long-term bond yields had acted like gravity for the local share market and really put a cap in terms of the price-to-earnings expansion that we've seen in equity markets over this year. It's causing some concerns for investors in terms of what it means for valuations in the environment of higher-for-longer interest rates, he added. Investors are just adjusting what is a normalized valuation for the market. If we're now looking at 10-year bond rates, that might have a high handle to them. The Aussie 2-year bond was at 4.044, while the 10-year was at a high of 4.576. And the ASX 30-day interbank futures now shows rates above the current 4.1% cash rate right out to 2025, with a peak of 4.265%. So this is going to put more pressure on the RBA to lift rates, and I'll make a separate show on this issue later. And the Aussie dollar edged higher on Friday to trade around a 63 cents. Elsewhere on the ASX, energy was the worst performing sector as crude oil extended its slump overnight on concerns that slowing global growth would erode consumption. West Texas Intermediate settled near $82 a barrel, crossing beneath its 50-day moving average for the first time since July. This massive swing in the oil price will ease pressures on inflation, but took Woodside Energy, for example, down to $34.19. And in company news, Magellan Financial plunged 18.5% to $7.18. The Sydney-based money manager was the worst performer on the ASX 200 after reporting a $4 billion drop in funds under management in September to $35 billion. But GQG Partners shares rallied 3% to $1.36 after it recorded $105.8 billion of funds under management. According to its latest update, the September figure is actually a drop from the $107.4 billion it booked for the previous month. And finally, Bitcoin has been stuck in a range between $27,000 and $28,000 US dollars, due to a resilient bearish trend that could potentially push the cryptocurrency down to key support levels of around 25,762 or even down low as 20,431. This was the state of affairs on Friday, with the market's unpredictability exacerbated by the presence of liquidity pockets and ongoing consolidation within the $1,300 range. The bearish trend could be negated if Bitcoin manages to break past the 200-day simple moving average at around $28,000 and then secure a daily close above the psychologically important level of $30,000. But while several factors could trigger this shift from bearish to bullish, including the approval of a spot Bitcoin exchange-traded fund, or perhaps a loss in a lawsuit by the Securities and Exchange Commission against a cryptocurrency firm, the recent downturn in the market has been marked by a significant sell-off back on Sunday the 2nd, and this event contributed further to the current stagnation of Bitcoin's price and the overall uncertainty in the crypto market. In these turbulent times for Bitcoin, investors are closely watching for any potential changes in market conditions that could affect the price of the world's largest cryptocurrency. And the interplay between bearish fractals and potential bullish triggers continues to shape the unpredictable landscape of Bitcoin trading. And that, in fact, sums up the overall market. But we need to watch the unrealized losses among holders of bonds, because at some point, the truth will out. In the meantime, equities are still priced for a Goldilocks soft landing, which is now highly improbable. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.